T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Ron, let's head right back out to the Hall and Capitas fan hotline, where we find Brett McMurphy of the Stadium Network. You can find him on Twitter, at Stadium. Brett, how are you today? Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks. Good morning, guys.
Now, the news broke yesterday. I'm reading your tweet right here. NCAA Division I Council voted to approve voluntary athletic activities in football, men's and women's basketball, beginning June 1st. What exactly does this mean, and will it happen? What? Maybe the better question is, what else needs to happen before these athletes can actually do this?
Well, you still have to have the conferences and or individual schools determine that they are going to do that. And certainly that could be determined by their local or state government or health officials if they're allowed to do that. But at least as far as the NCAA is concerned, they can go ahead and do that, because certainly this is a unique situation. We've never been in this position where the student athletes were off campus at this time of the year. And then basically this just opens the door, excuse me, to allow these conferences and schools to come back as early as June 1st, if that's what they desire. So they have the NCAA's blessing that it's okay, you can do that. And so then, for instance, the SEC presidents will vote on Friday whether to return on June 1st, and I'm sure a number of other conferences will also do the same. So that's the good news. Not that there's bad news, but still I think the biggest challenge or the biggest hurdle is determining what the safety guidelines are and different protocols for the different schools and or conferences, as far as, you know, when you have all the student-athletes back, you know, what if one person tests positive? And I don't know the answer to this, but, you know, in the NBA, they shut down the NBA because of Rudy Gobert. I don't necessarily think that will be the case now with what we know about the virus, the more information we get and different factors. But, again, there has to be a policy in place in theory that, you know, in another question is, will all conferences have the same policies, or will it be one that all NCAA schools has? That's kind of an unknown right now. But I think that's going to be the biggest challenge is, you know, how often are the students tested? You know, what happens if there is a positive test? What if it's an athlete or a coach? Is it handled different? I mean, you ask me a great question and I answer it, and then I have 20 more questions for myself. So I can imagine what these guys are going through trying to figure this out.
Brett, are we up against it time-wise here? It seems like these things all happen right at the very end. If they're going to play football this fall, I think bowls would be in the Big 12. So they've got to be up and running by mid-July. They got to start making some decisions here, don't they?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I talked to Jack Swarbrick, Notre Dame's athletic director, today, and he basically said he thinks, you know, by mid-June, hopefully we'll have some definitive answers. But you're right. They basically have said they need 6 weeks as far as practice time, if you will. So reporting June 1st does not include that. This is just voluntary workout training. But as far as practicing and those sort of things, they need to get going by July 15th if we're going to start the last week of August or the first week of September, depending on when your school season opener is.
Brett McMurphy of the Stadium Network joining us here. And we've asked this question probably a million times here since this whole thing began, Brett. But for you, what is your confidence level right now that we will see college football without fans starting when it would normally start or thereabouts?
It all depends on what the health and safety guidelines are. Can those requirements be met? If they can, and that's a big if, but if they can, absolutely, we will have football in the fall. Will it be a complete 12-game season? Will it start on time? Will it end on time? I'm not as confident about that. But I do think, you know, because of how critical, how imperative it is to kind of recoup some of this revenue associated with college football, that even if you don't play with fans, even if, you know, Gene Smith, Ohio State's athletic director, talked about this yesterday, is that with the social distancing guideline, he thinks they could get anywhere from 20 to 50,000 in their stadium, which is basically, you know, seats about 100,000. So, you know, we're not going to see full stadiums. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. But, you know, how will these venues want to operate? Can they operate, you know, one-fourth full, one-third full? I know a lot of ADs and commissioners have said, look, we don't want to play without any fans, but if it comes down and your two options are no football or football with no fans, they'll be teeing it up. Make no mistake about that.
Brett, in the worst-case scenario, and we've heard them talk about this, you know, how the landscape would change, what would college athletics look like if there's no football this fall?
Well, if you go no football this fall and no football this spring, so none in the entire academic year, you know, I talked to over 100 athletic directors, and the words they used were catastrophic, doomsday. One AD summed, I think, everybody up the best. He said, look, if we don't have football, we're obliqued. And the reality is you're going to see group of five football programs disbanded. You'll see Olympic sports at the Power Five level eliminated overnight. You're going to see hits taken by every FBS school out there, and there's 130 of them. Now, some of them will be able to survive better than others. But there's going to be big impacts, and you know, you could have a group of five schools that don't drop their programs. Maybe they decide to drop down to the FCS level. I mean, there's a number of things that can happen. I mean, you've already seen a number of Olympic sports at Cincinnati, Florida International, Akron, Bowling Green. They've dropped Olympic sports already. That's just based on what happened with not having the NCAA basketball tournament and the impact of the virus so far. You add on not playing football, that's 100 times more deadly, if you will. And it would have huge repercussions, and it would totally impact and change the landscape of college football and college athletics as we know it.
Given that, and we're talking to Brett McMurphy of the Stadium Network. You can find him on Twitter, @Stadium. Given what you just said and what's at stake here and the money at stake, the survival of some programs, we asked this earlier in the show, Brett, if you were a parent who had a college athlete, would it be difficult to trust that the people that you've entrusted your kid to have their best interest in mind? Or is money the master of all this, and would it be difficult for you to trust that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, you know, you could probably ask that question to 10 people throughout the United States in 10 different parts of the country, and you're probably going to get 10 different answers. I think part of it is how comfortable you are with what you know about the virus or how serious you think the virus is. I mean, look, some people think it's the flu, and other people think it's the most deadly thing we've ever faced. So I'm not saying either viewpoint's right or wrong, but I think that goes into a large part of it.
I do know that, you know, look, these university presidents are not risk takers, and ultimately it's their decision to bring the students and the student athletes back on campus. So they're certainly not going to do that if they're going to open themselves up to, you know, thousands of lawsuits from people who say, well, we contracted the virus on your campus and I came home and got some relatives sick and, you know, we had some bad consequences with that. So I would be confident. I understand the skeptical nature of people. They're saying, well, they're just bringing these kids back because they get to play football at all costs. I understand that, but I truly believe that unless they can guarantee the health and safety of these student athletes, that they're not going to do that. So ultimately, would I send my kid to college to play football if I was in that situation? You know, right now I'd say I don't know because I don't have to make that decision. Ask me in another couple of weeks and I may have a better answer. But again, depending on, I think, where your kid's playing and what part of the country, I think that probably will impact your decision as well.
Brett, early on, the schools, the NCAA, all said if the kids aren't on campus, we can't have football and fall sports. Is there a way around that, do you think? I've seen some people, you know, who was it, Bowlesby said that if they're taking online classes, we could still pull this off. Do you see that as a factor here?
No, you're right. I mean, they changed their tune on that. They, you know, a few months ago, it was the students had to be on campus. And then I talked to Bowlesby a couple weeks ago, and he said, no, look, all I meant is the student athletes have to be taking class. They can't just come play sports and not take class. So taking online classes would be satisfactory enough. Larry Scott, however, the Pac-12 commissioner, told me that no, the general students would have to be on campus to bring back the student athletes. We would not only bring back the student athletes. However, he quickly said, if we have some students back on campus with the student athletes, that would be fine. Well, how many is some? Is that 100? Is that 500? Is that 1,000? I think that's kind of I don't want to say that's a loophole, but it's basically that's the way they're going to spin it. Is they're going to have every school is going to have these quote hybrid models, and what all that means is some schools will be on campus and some will be online, and so that way it kind of opens the door or makes it less of a bad look PR wise when you bring the student athletes back. So they'll figure out a way to do it, but again, you know, I mentioned that one scenario earlier. If the two options are no football or football with no students on campus and only bring the student athletes back on campus, they'll bring the student athletes back and play that way because that's how critical the money is to everybody. Again, if they can guarantee the health and safety of the student athletes.
We'll leave it with this one, Brett, and that is, can you conceive a college football season where it starts at different times in different places? Where we talked, James Franklin talked about the Big Ten, where some teams in a conference might not be ready to go because of state guidelines and things, and the others just say, well, you know, forget it, we're going to move ahead anyway. Like, what can you see that kind of landscape developing and then playing anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that Bob Bowlesby told me. He said, look, the conferences, although they'd like to be, they're not necessarily going to be in lockstep. And he told me it's not inconceivable that the Big Ten could play and the Pac-12 couldn't play, or that Big 12 could play and the SEC couldn't play. And so in the scenario you mentioned, yeah, absolutely, I can see that happening. And I think because of that, I think ultimately we end up with some kind of 8, 9, or 10-game season where it's conference only, and then maybe each school can add one conference game. So some in-state rivals that aren't in the same conference can get played, like Louisville and Kentucky, or Florida State, South Carolina, Clemson, those sort of games. But if you've got a number of schools starting at different times, then certainly, you know, to have that 6-week training period, they're not going to line up with the other schools, and so that the games that would be impacted the most would be the non-conference games. But then even if you say, well, let's just cut off the non-conference games, let's start a week early in October, that's not that easier either because you've got 32 conference games just among the Power Five conferences in the month of September. So those conference games would have to get shuffled back into the schedule in October, November, or December, and you don't even know. Obviously, schools don't have the same open date. So the good news is they've got literally dozens of plans on when and how to play the college football season. It's just kind of deciding when everybody can get started, and that will ultimately determine which plan they put in place.
Maybe that could lead to one more Pitt-Penn State game, huh?
Hey, I mean, you know, I've talked to multiple ADs at different conferences, and they've said, you know, they want to be more regional, so certainly that would be a possibility. And also, I mean, this sounds crazy, but they also said, you know, look, we could play home-and-home series against teams within our same conference. If we've got, you know, you've got the Big Ten. There's 14 teams spread out over 11 states. So you may have some states that can't play. So if you've got to build back up your conference schedule, then who's to say, you know, Penn State won't play a home-and-home with Michigan. Play one at Michigan, play one in State College. I don't know. I mean, yeah, that sounds crazy. Is that a possibility? Yes. Is it likely? Probably not. But again, we're waiting to see, you know, kind of what restrictions there are for all the different schools and states. And again, that's just one of many, many options that are being considered.
Brett, great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.